Sarah Holdren, it is an As You Like It summer. You're the second director I've talked to this summer about their summer production of As You Like It. So I want to know first, why As You Like It all of a sudden? As directors like to say, why As You Like It, why now? But also, how is your As You Like It going to be the definitive one?
Definitive. No more need to be done. Yeah, of course.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 924, director Sarah Holdren. Sarah Holdren is the theater critic for New York Magazine and Vulture.com, and for what it's worth, my absolute favorite theater critic. She's also a director whose production of As You Like It opens this week at Shakespeare at Notre Dame, where, again, for what it's worth, we workshopped William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, back in 2015. It was a real thrill to talk to Sarah about her work as both a director and a critic, how seeing the Reduced Shakespeare Company perform at the Kennedy Center was a formative influence, and how she's found in As You Like It connections to our current moment.
I got really fascinated in these ideas of the sort of like utopian experiment, and in the sort of center of the play, not just as a kind of like, a love play, a personal relationship play, but in those relationships, those love, those pairs, those beautiful couples as like offshoots of this kind of larger conscious crafting of community in Arden. Mm-hmm. So there's something that, I'm always fascinated by the Green World plays as these kind of, there's always something broken about society and we've got to leave it and go to the woods, go to the green world, go to the forest and kind of figure out what we've messed up, engage in something where we start to like remake ideas of how to live together and how to treat each other. And to me, there's always like, part of the reason I think I do theater primarily as opposed to another art form is that I think that theater is always a wild, huge metaphor for exactly that. Like every time you make a play, you are crafting a small society and you're deciding what the rules are and you're deciding, is it authoritarian? Is it egalitarian? Do we treat each other? How do we resolve conflicts? How do we, deal with relationships? All of these sort of like we're sort of practicing for how to live in a world with other humans every time we make one of these massive collaborative projects. So it felt like inside the play, like that's what Arden is too. That's sort of what the Duke's experiment is in this kind of off-grid place. And I got really interested in like other, moments in history or moments now where people are attempting sort of something similar. And this particular production, anybody who's familiar with the work of Bread and Puppet Theater up in Vermont, Peter Schumann's work, they might see some like, influences and some, really for me, part of this show is sort of spiritually dedicated to Peter and to work like that. I started thinking a lot about Bread and Puppet and this idea of the kind of like the theater company or the arts, the arts community that's sort of like away in Vermont, in the woods, functioning as a farm, making the stuff. And also like, everybody's doing a kitchen shift. Everybody's sleeping in tents. Everybody's, like pooping in holes, showering in the woods and with like cold, bags of water hanging above your head, and that started getting really interesting to me because it felt like, okay, that actually feels very accurate to the spirit of what's going on in this show. Especially given that, the first time we see the Duke and in this production, her followers out in the woods, she's having a moment of, hey guys, like, remember that this is good, right? Like we chose this, so, it's like, I think sometimes I get a little bit, it's that thing of like, cognitive dissonance in Shakespeare, right? Where like sometimes, I mean, I think a big problem in a lot of modern Shakespeare is that we don't actually lean like sort of, we don't always trust meaning and we don't always pursue meaning. And a lot of times what we're seeing actually doesn't necessarily like mesh with what we're hearing, which convinces our brains that, oh, actually this isn't understandable. Like, oh, you know, I'm not supposed to be able to understand this. And then we clock out. And to see a picture that is idyllic, you know, where everyone is sitting around just going like, you know, all we do is lie on beautiful tufts of grass and, you know, like sing Hey Nani Nani or whatever. And then to hear the Duke saying, hey, like this is sometimes hard, but it's also good, right? Like those two things actually kind of don't go together in my head. Right. So like that idea of a space of like communal experiment where it's not easy and like the showers are never warm and you usually stink and all this stuff, but you chose it and you chose it for very specific sort of ethical, you know, reasons and you're like on a deep level happy to be here, you know, like that started getting really, really interesting to me, and sort of building Arden as a kind of, you know, like as the metaphor of like, this is the theater, this is a making space, this is an off-grid communal experiment, like this is a place of creative, conscious rebuilding of the rules of society where we can kind of like have the freedom to play and to like rediscover how do we want to express ourselves, who do we want to love, you know, what is, you know, what do we feel like our true identities are, you know, this is the end of my big, you know, 15-minute answer to your first question. But like that to me is what brings me, it comes all the way back around to the title.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sort of what does this title mean other than, you know, something kind of like, oh, you know, like it's just, you know, it's fluffy and sweet and it's As You Like It because it has all of the tropes we love, you know, shepherds and comedy and songs and girls dressing as boys or whatever. And that's true. But also like, what if we took the title kind of like on a very sincere level and asked, you know, like what would, like, but truly, like what would the world look like? What would our lives look like if things really were, you know, according to our desire, according to like what would bring us joy, you know, like
right.
if we could
right.
express ourselves as we like it, if we could love as we like it, if we could build the spaces around ourselves and the rules of government as we like it.
Well, I'm sorry, that's all the time we have.
This no. is me. This is how I answer questions. It takes 20 minutes.
But it's that's fascinating because you make me realize that the fraughter the world has got, I realize that the more deeply I have dived into my own creative work as my own kind of self-care. You know,
yeah.
And but as in the play, one has to emerge from that and engage again.
Yeah.
With the world, and hopefully we return to the world energized. You know, in a better place with a clearer ideas of how to proceed. I can't wait to see the production because it really feels like, oh God, that is going to be really of the moment. I can't wait.
I hope so. There's going to be some really, you know, there's going to be some surprises too. We've got, there's some beautiful puppetry work being done in the play, which is a little bit, you know, it's drawn from moments that I love in the text, but it sort of expands upon them and expands a little bit upon, this idea of the god Hymen at the end, you know, so it's like, there's some stuff going on in the show that I think will be a little bit, both textually and texturally, surprising in a fun way.
Does it feel to you, I'm in a Shakespeare book club because of course I am. And my wife observed when we read As You Like It, she said, it feels to me like Shakespeare's greatest hits. He threw in so many characters because he's got so many actors he's got to write parts for and he wants to give them all fun things to do. Is that a thing that resonates with you in this play?
I mean, I think that does, like so when I did it with the, in 2021 with the students, you know, one thing I kind of realized, like on a really visceral level, was I was like, oh, this play takes just an entire, I mean, yes, technically there's a clown, but like this play takes an entire ensemble of clowns, like on a deep level, like sort of people who like in their bones across the board, like really understand timing, really understand the sort of like you know, like the way we have this joke in the room that like comedy is math. And it is that sort of funny thing where like, actors sometimes I think like want to believe that, you know, it's like there are infinite ways to do anything. And it's sort of like, not with a line that needs to be timed like that or whatever, you know, it's like comedy really will tell you sometimes, you know, it's like, no, like there is one way that's funnier than the other ways or whatever. Or there are a couple ways that are funnier than the other ways, but it takes people who have, I think the thing that is joyful about it to me is that one of the things I love about like actors and Shakespeare in general is that as opposed to, I think, still sort of our reigning acting pedagogy in this country, which, you know, I think is very sort of authenticity obsessed and very kind of like, you know, how can I go to like this very real place? And we love to give our Oscars to, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio for like really eating bison liver. And you're sort of like, is that acting or is that eating bison liver? Like, I'm not sure, you know, but for me, like what Shakespeare provides for actors is this like incredible opportunity to be both hugely present in like this emotional, spiritual, like, you know, this beautiful space of connection and of truth in a sort of larger sense, but then also to be an acrobat, you know, to be outside your own performance and to be crafting it and to be nimble and to sort of, you know, to have to work on both those levels at once, you know, like that is what the poetry demands. That's what the structure demands. Like that's what the dramaturgy of, you know, a present audience demands, like having to, you can't deny that they're there and you would never want to deny that they're there. They're your ally. I think we really undervalue artifice in the American theater. And sort of put it in like a bad category, you know, like, oh, you know, somehow like fake is bad. And it's like, this entire thing is it's all fake. Why do we think this is, you know, like is bad for some reason? So, I mean, I think that like that thing of like, As You Like It being a particularly, you know, like having a whole rich ensemble of people who, no matter the sort of size of the role, like all require a little bit of that, like sort of, you know, now I'm the acrobat on the floor and I have to be able to juggle.
Right.
It's really lovely.
Well, I love everything that you said there. For me, the juggling is always performance versus acting, you know, and sometimes they live in the same body. And I think that's one thing I love about Shakespeare, because it does require exactly that. It requires truth and emotion and real and naturalism, I suppose. But you can't say that speech without that language, without it being in some ways performative.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Hi, I'm movie critic Bob Mondello. And though click and clack, the Car Talk guys bust a gasket when they hear it, I'm on National Public Radio.
Where can you RSC the RSE? This fall of 2024, we'll be performing our special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in Illinois, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Colorado. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Sarah Holdren, whose production of As You Like It opens this week at Shakespeare at Notre Dame, and who's also the theater critic for New York Magazine and Vulture.com. Can we talk a little bit about your work as a critic?
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons I love your criticism is that it seems genuinely, it is genuinely informed by your work as an artist. And you also ask the important questions. For instance, in your review of Enemy of the People, you raise the important issue of why don't theaters stay open and have bars that are open so we can talk about the play afterwards, which is the only thing we want to do for real.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think The first time that I ended up in this role, which was from 2017 to 2019, and then I took a break and now I'm back again. I feel like, I mean, this is not, I didn't expect to land in this, in this field in my life. And so I was sort of navigating how I felt like criticism, you know, in its essence, is, but also should function more practically like something other than consumer reporting in the world. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's like sort of where it lands frequently. And that is that's not just a function of how, you know, certain writers write or whatever. It's also a function of capitalism. Like we're all just slotted into, you know, this idea that this stuff is a product, which is just, you know, which is just like wrong from the core, but here we are. So like, right. So a lot of times I think that reviews, you can't get away on some level from them serving the purpose of, should I spend my money on this or not? Especially in a world where theater, is shamefully inaccessible still on so many levels. And, so I feel like, you know, but for me, it was always a question of like, okay, you know, this thing actually, I think in terms of what it is as its own art form, as its own form of, you know, putting a, you know, like an original piece of something, of writing, of thought into the world. Like it should be doing something other than kind of like, you know, other than assessing that question of monetary worth. So for me, the other thing that it should constantly be doing is reflecting on the form as a whole, right? And sort of right. saying like, what the, you know, the kind of constant question, right, is like, why is this theater? Should it be theater? Mm. What is theater? What makes theater, especially in this, you know, in our kind of like age of streaming and prestige TV and post-pandemic malaise where people are like, ooh, I got really used to wearing my sweatpants. Not sure if I want to leave when I have a million things to watch at home or whatever. You know, it's like, what is the kind of, you know, what is it that this form uniquely does that no other form can do? You know, what can it offer? What does its DNA sort of provide that like, you know, that is not achievable by Netflix, you know, that's not achievable by a piece of, you know, op-ed writing, that's not achievable by a novel, you know, like, you know, so that kind of constant question of, you know, like is a show engaging with its own genetics, with its own genetic code, you know, with like the question of like, why should this be on a stage? What is the necessity of bringing people's bodies to a room to experience this. And then sort of the questions of like, okay, given that, you know, on a sort of broader level of like, you know, I mean, I don't love phrases like the industry, but, you know, just realistically speaking, like on a broader level of like the industry sort of, you know, how is this show functioning inside that container? And is it, you know, like, is it doing something, say, for instance, like Enemy of the People, where it's sort of like recognizing that there's a, you know, like recognizing maybe one of the places where like, we don't necessarily take advantage of some of the things that like we could be taking advantage of to make this thing more itself, more alive, more communal, more like civic experience, which involves things like being able to drink beer afterwards.
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs> Yeah, 100%. Well, yeah. And do you, I mean, your work as an artist clearly informs your knowledge and your criticism. Do you find your work as a critic informing your artistic work?
That's a great question. I feel like I can't remember who it was. I think it was a critic who I think used to write for maybe like the LA Times or something, but I remember reading a quote at some point by someone who said that criticism is directing backwards, which I thought was kind of interesting. And, you know, I mean, it's like all sort of, you know, Wildian phrases. It's like, you know, it's a little bit oversimplified or whatever, but like, but there's something to it, you know, that sort of idea that that on the one hand you are, you know, you're sort of building a car, you're building a complex machine. And then on the other hand, you're like opening the hood and being like, how was this car built? And like, oh, there's your problem, you know. Yeah. I sort of like the mechanic metaphor a lot because I feel like in order to be able to go, oh, there's your problem, you actually have to understand how cars work, which, you know, like, which is not necessarily, and you are making like leaps of, you know, you're having to take risks too, because like, I think, you know, it's like sometimes you're presented with like a kind of machine that is not as familiar to you, and you have to sort of take the risk of going, okay, like based on what I have before me, based on like, you know, as much as I can kind of like retro engineer this, you know, like what are, you know, what kind of guesses can I make? But yeah, I think that like, I mean, I guess the way that the writing would feed back into the directing is that I think, I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where like, I find myself also asking those same questions of myself, you know, just in a sort of consistent mental way, you know, like if I'm, you know, like if I'm working on something, well, actually this is one thing. I have this thing about boredom, which is, you know, a kind of like I really believe that overall, like we all need to be like much more honest about our boredom. Like what I, you know, and like, I think that again, this is like a sort of bad, it's like one of the like sort of side effects again, of like this sort of, you know, this thing of like, I spent, you know, $300 on this Broadway ticket. And like, you know, in my heart of hearts, I'm bored, but like, I don't want to have wasted my money, and I don't necessarily want to socially admit that. So I guess I'm just going to be like, yeah, this is fine. And then like never come back to the theater because like secretly I didn't enjoy myself at all. And so I'm kind of like, you know, anytime, you know, if I'm working on something and I'm like, like, you know, my attention is wandering, it's like, oh no, like, you know, you like, I think sometimes directors, you know, can get very, it's, you know, you can sort of get into the weeds and be like, well, but we spent so much time on this, or like, this was an idea I loved when I originally had it. And you can kind of become dishonest about your own boredom.
Yeah. Like, look at the beautiful lug nut I've put on this machine. Yeah, but the machine is boring.
Yeah, exactly. It's not actually moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So just sort of like that type of you know, of trying to like bring the same kind of, like questions of like, you know, of how is this functioning holistically? You know, and am I engaged in every moment? My partner is a fiction writer. And he has this thing that he says where he's like when he's editing his own work, when he goes back through things, he's like, you know, if I ever find myself going, oh, well, I'm like waiting to get to the next part, I like that part, he's like, I know there's something I should cut, you know, because it's like, you should, that's how you should feel ideally in every moment.
That's funny. A writer has to edit his own work. Yes, of course. You've got to have two sides of the brain. The only thing I'm actually trained to do in this business is direct. I got my MFA in directing, but I do so very little actual directing. But every day when I'm in a show, I'm not getting all the attention from the director I want. I'm having to direct myself.
Yeah.
I'm writing stuff going, well, how would I stage this? And if I were the director, wouldn't I cut this? Yeah.
Well, and I feel like, you know, the other thing is that I mean, the theater that I love and like the rooms that I try to build are so, I you know, like ensemble is sort of like, you know, the thing I love most of all. And I kind of want to bring, weirdly, I feel like I kind of come from both sort of poles of on the one hand, Shakespeare and these kind of, you know, so-called classical works, but then also I did a lot of devising and a lot of like weird experimental theater back in the day when I was in college. And like, I actually kind of love the collision of those things. Like the idea that, you know, in any room, even a kind of, you know, a room where you're working on a you know, 400 plus year old play, there can and should be a sort of devising ethos about it and a way in which this entire company feels like, you know, well, this, I mean, it is still like, this is, you know, this text perhaps has existed for ages, but like everyone should feel like empowered, ownership, able to be like, you know, this is ours this time, what are we doing with it? And again, and like, to your point, I mean, my like dream is to create spaces where like, you know, I'm not the only one necessarily calling out, you know, it's like where actors feel like they can be like, this isn't working for me. Like, can we, you know, right. like talk about this, you know, like I have this joke where, you know, when I'm working, I really like to get up on our feet super fast. I love text work, but I don't actually believe in doing it sitting down. I just feel like a lot of times, you know, it's like you do all of this like really meaningful table work and then you get up and you're like, I don't remember anything we talked about. But so like, you know, like doing it when it's like actually flowing through your, you know, your sort of whole biomechanical, like, you know, whatever. But so I, you know, I sort of have a joke in rooms where it's like, you know, I like to sketch through the entire play as fast as we can. So we've got, you know, a kind of rough shape of everything. But then when we're going back again and sort of, you know, getting detailed and starting to shade and highlight and fill in that sketch, they're beautiful stage managers have been recording the blocking that we did, but I never write down my own blocking because I sort of believe that if we don't remember it the next time, it was like, maybe not that great. So like, we should just do something else.
100%. I don't write down blocking either. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Sarah Holdren's production of As You Like It begins performances tomorrow night, August 20th, and runs through September 1st, 2024. Go to shakespeare.nd.edu for more information, and then go to vulture.com to read Sarah's reviews. It's some of the best writing about theater out there, including and maybe especially when she's writing about shows or productions you might never get to see. Then send us your theater writing via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks as always to theater poo-pooer Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Mickey Klafka. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to National Public Radio's Bob Mondello, who used to be my favorite theater critic until he became my favorite film critic. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 924 2770 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Sarah, thank you so much. It is so lovely to meet you and have this conversation.
It's lovely to meet you too. I mean, truly, I have very, like, I told my parents the other day, like, I have two very visceral memories. I mean, I remember a lot of it, but like my two visceral memories from seeing Reduced Shakespeare Company when I was, I don't know, in sixth grade or something are, one, why should I call you Butt Love? Very important.
Formative joke.
A timeless joke. Two, the moment of beginning What a Piece of Work Is a Man from a sort of flippant, tossed off perspective and then dropping in over the course of the speech. Like that moment stuck with me deeply and still sort of informs, I think, like I think about it a lot when I think about these questions of artifice, you know, and of kind of like the very fine line between something being quote unquote real or not real. Really like a beautiful moment that I remember a lot.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.